Welcome to Women Made New. I'm your host, Crystalina Everett. Thank you for joining me. So today we are talking with everyday just Catholic women who are just striving for holiness, living their day in, day out, just trying to do what's right, trying to live for God, and just that everyday Catholic woman striving for holiness, which it's not easy. There's a lot coming at us. There's a lot going on in our lives. There's a lot going on in the world. And hearing these different stories, I have found it's actually really helped me. And I know a lot of you out there are going through your own journey and your own struggle and your own faith walk. It's always good just to listen to someone that maybe might be in your same shoes right now or has been, and how they overcame those different trials in their life. But before I get into it with the beautiful women that I interviewed, I wanted to touch on something that I'm noticing and that I've noticed in the past with myself or with friends. And it's also maybe call it a holiday warning, right? A lot of us start getting into the hustle and bustle of like Thanksgiving next week. And a lot of us today are grocery shopping and getting our house ready and knowing guests are coming over. What is it you're going to cook or bring, or all of those things that we do for Thanksgiving, knowing the kids. A lot of you are going to have them home next week because they're off for the week for the holiday season. There's a lot of busyness. But in that busyness of the holidays and of the familiar and of the maybe even trimming the tree and the holiday music and the drinks and the food and the smells and going back home to maybe people that maybe used to date them or people that you used to party with before you left to college, or maybe they're those relatives that you really can't stand and you have a really hard time with and you don't know how you're going to face them, or you have a very judgmental family and you don't want to go to Thanksgiving, but you don't want to cause problems. There's a lot going on right now, but there's a familiarity in the holiday season for all of us of how we grew up. And this is just a little warning not to slip back in this time of maybe past sins or past temptations or that old relationship or old addictions that you may not even be aware of or even think about. And you're just kind of going through the motions and getting caught up in everything. But then at the end of it, you're like, why did I do that? Why did I fall back into that? Why did I go there? Why did I see them? When deep down, you knew you weren't supposed to. But a lot of the times we just justify that sin. I remember, oh my goodness, the justifications, and I would talk myself into things sometimes, right? And we've all done that. But just to be on guard this holiday season, this holiday week, during times of vacation and getting comfortable and seeing old friends, or maybe revisiting places where maybe you used to have that drink or watch certain things or hang out at certain places with people, just to be spiritually on guard. Because maybe you're having some momentum in your relationship with God, and you're having that momentum in your relationship with Jesus and your Catholic faith. And don't lose it. To be on guard. Because it's when our guard is down and we kind of just kind of go with the flow and like, oh, it's not that bad. It's not that big of a deal. Yes, it is, because you're already starting to justify it. But I wanted to give you that warning because it's something that I actually used to do when I was living that incredibly sinful life. And not that you're in some sinful life right now, but it's so easy and such a slippery slope to go back to what is routine, to where we thought maybe there were times we had a lot of fun, or maybe that person isn't that bad. Maybe they really did love you. And you start questioning things when you knew that was a very bad relationship, or you knew those friends were horrible for you. You might have to face those things. So today is a day to think about that, to prepare yourself, and to get strong before you face those things. So maybe today, go to confession, go to adoration, spend time with God, memorize a Bible verse. I know what it's like to fall back into those bad habits, or maybe addictions, or bad relationships, or friends. And one time I was reading the Bible and I was kind of in the middle of a scenario like that. And I just am like, I need to read the Bible. And this hit me in between the eyes. And it was that Proverbs 26:11. Some of you know what I'm talking about. And it's a bit harsh, but sometimes you need that when you're going through what you're going through and kind of toying with sin, right? And Proverbs 26:11 says, as a dog returns to its vomit, so a fool repeats his folly. And I'm like jaw drop thinking, oh my gosh, that was me. That's exactly what I was doing. And so this is just a little reminder, a little warning to prepare yourself. And there's nothing more important right now than to be right with God. We're all going to get busy. We're all going to get into the holidays, and it is a wonderful, joyous, unbelievable time. And I just want to maybe challenge everyone out there in this time of Advent that we're coming upon and to think about it, and in that thankfulness that maybe you're thinking about this upcoming week with your family and sitting around the table, to really think about, okay, well, what is it that maybe I need to really change in my life as well, that can actually better my life, the things that God is asking me to do and that maybe I've just been ignoring? And maybe consider taking the time of Advent and really kind of prepare yourself, because it's going to be coming. We're going to talk a lot more about that in the weeks to come. But maybe just take that time as a sabbatical from certain things in your life or certain people in your life, or ways that you know, okay, God has been asking me to do this one thing for a really long time and I haven't done it. And maybe Advent is a time I do that. I don't know. Maybe make that time 1 week, every week, to go to adoration. Eucharistic adoration absolutely changed my entire life. And I know that Jesus is calling all people to himself in this Eucharistic revival that is going on in the church right now. And I know he's calling you. And I know Jesus wants your undivided attention. And you can do that in adoration by shutting out the distractions of the world, by turning off the phone, putting it on silent, and just sitting there with Jesus. Give God the time that you're talking to him, because we so overlook the importance of putting God first and taking care of our soul. And a lot of us are getting our houses ready and it's going to look pristine and unbelievably beautiful, and you want everyone to come and sit around your table and it's going to be magnificent. But some of you have not been to confession maybe in a year, or maybe some of you haven't gone in months or weeks. I don't know. But to also prepare your souls, getting that courage to just say, okay, I'm going to do this. So with that being said, we are going to have a quick minute with our dear friend, Justin Fatiga. And then after that, we are going to get right into it with Erin Yup and her mother, Marie McCroy. So stay tuned.
Just a couple months ago, I decided to go on the Cristalina Everett Show. I was like, what am I doing here being on the Women Made New? And she encouraged me to share a word of the day with all the people on Instagram and Facebook that follow me. When I started doing that, I didn't realize how many people just needed that little bit of encouragement. And I think every one of us need to speak a word into our friends, into our children, into those people we're with, because a word matters. My word for you today is encourage. Go out there and encourage somebody to make a difference, and you be that encouragement for them. That's my word for the day, and I want to thank the Woman Made New for that.
Okay, everyone. So before we get into this interview with these two beautiful ladies, I have to preface this again that I was literally losing my voice while I was doing these interviews, and I was just really struggling through it. But I'm not crying. I'm not upset. I just was getting over a sickness, and it literally was taking my voice out. So just to let you know, before we get into it with Erin Yup and her mother, Marie McCroy.
My name is Erin Marie Yep, and I am as cradle Catholic as they come. So, which is actually kind of a miracle because my parents are from Belfast, Northern Ireland, and they both come from families of 8 kids, and they are the only 2 practicing Catholics out of 16 kids. And that's because when they left Ireland, my dad went to a very liberal Jesuit college, and it was there he met one faithful Jesuit priest who had been in a Chinese prison camp and got out and became a professor and helped my dad revert back to his faith. And thanks to him, yeah, out of 16 children, only 2 are practicing, and they're the only ones who have practicing any practicing Catholic kids. So, yeah, so
I have to say, before we go on, that Erin knew when I was young and wild and crazy, and we grew up together, and I was so out of control. Even a brat little girl when I was in 6th grade, and you were going to the same school, right?
Oh my gosh.
Way back in the day. Well, I was bad.
But you were a little sister.
I was younger, and she was friends with my older sister. So I've known Erin for actually quite a while now. And I didn't even know she was going to be on this team of these amazing women putting on this event. And I walked in the room and I was like, Erin McCroy. And there she was. So, and very pregnant, which was awesome. And how many is this for you?
This is our 3rd.
What kind of advice or things do you have for women out there that maybe are pregnant, that are going through a lot? And how have you handled it? Because it's a big deal.
Yeah, not well. So, no, I'm kidding. But yeah, it's funny because in my story, I definitely have been a working girl.
Yes.
And whether or not I was truly actually good at what I did, I thought I was kind of phenomenal at what I did. But motherhood has really kicked my butt. And
it has a tendency to do that.
Oh my gosh. There's no job truly that I just think it's so beautiful how God works because it's in, you know, I've gotten to be in part of incredible projects all over the Catholic world and even the secular world and media. But this is the one job where I really need him. And he I think gave me this job later in life because I didn't get married till very late. And so I'll be 44 having this 3rd baby. I was 42 when I had my 1st.
Wow. You look so young. Oh, gorgeous. Irish, nice. Red hair, you name it. It's right here, everybody.
But you know what's funny is you're a big part of my story of how, because I was a cradle Catholic and I did go to daily mass, grew up saying the rosary, said every day, adoration every day, was involved in really amazing Catholic projects. And I realized my late 20s, early 30s, that my life just wasn't working. And despite having access to these incredible tools, and it was confusing because everybody I knew who was living that life of, you know, chastity and prayers and Eucharist and was either married or on the path. And I was still, sorry, it's hard to breathe because I'm so pregnant. But yeah, I was like, why isn't something's not working in my life? And, I was in a really difficult situation. I'm super grateful again. So to not just, but also Jason, when I was younger, that message of chastity, kept me, from marrying the wrong person.
Wow.
Because I was growing up and I didn't understand. What wasn't working was I, being Irish, you know, there's a lot of addiction in my extended family. And that can really, even if you're not an addict yourself, the impact of addiction around you and family can really affect you. And so I growing up was really attracted to people that weren't good for me. And the one thing that was deeply installed to me at a young age was the message of chastity. And thank God for it, because had I gotten married at a younger age, I definitely would have married the wrong person. And I would have definitely married the wrong person if I hadn't been living chastely, I'm sure. And I credit that truly to a speaker, Mary Beth Bonacci, who came to my school when I was younger in 7th grade. And Because, you know, growing up, you love your faith because you love your parents and your parents love the faith. But then you realize that your parents aren't perfect and maybe neither is their faith. And you start to question. At that age, I went to a school where the teacher spoke like 9 languages fluently. He was a brilliant man. And he drilled into us like the 5 proofs of the existence of God. And we had to learn our faith, Latin and Greek. And we had to truly, I truly learned my faith. So it went, I had a really knowledgeable understanding of it. And that really helped me. But then I do remember in high school, and I was convicted of chastity through Mary Beth Bonacci. And then in high school, I remember how grateful I was that I had this logical understanding of the faith. But then there were moments where I kind of wished I wasn't Catholic, especially when I was out late with a guy one night. And it's funny how, like, as important as it is to know your faith, nothing can really substitute that relationship with God, but how important it is to have both, you know? And because in that moment I was able to like rationalize like a way, well, it's not that bad because, and maybe the church doesn't really know and all these things, but the one thing I could not rationalize away so that I could just do whatever I wanted was this image of my dad sitting in a church every night in the dark for 2 hours. He would do this every single night. The priest gave him the keys and he would go in and sit in front of the tabernacle. And I just remember I was sitting in this guy's house and the image of my dad sitting in a dark church with a little red candle next to the tabernacle came into my mind. And I was thinking, oh, like, he's not crazy. I mean, he is crazy, but he's not crazy, crazy. Why does he sit there? If it's not real, if it's, I can like try to rationalize it, then why does he sit there? And that was enough to get me through until I met Jason in the Bahamas. And that,
so let me just preface this really quick. Erin was there when I met Jason.
That's right.
Like we met for the first time, right? Right. And we were at the Bahamas learning how to be chastity speakers. And Jason was a speaker.
That's right.
And he completely just freaked me out because I just knew deep in my heart that was going to be my future husband. And that's why I stayed away from him as much as I did at that conference.
I know.
I just totally tried to avoid him.
I didn't know if you were into him, but I definitely knew he was into you.
I know. I was like, I just totally was ignoring him. I was.
And the funny thing is at that conference, I was struggling to make a really difficult decision. And I woke up at like 3 a.m. and I went down to the tabernacle to pray. And of course, everybody was asleep. But I was sitting there and I was just deciding whether to give like the second missionary year. And I started getting really upset because the first one was so hard. And I started like crying in the tabernacle thinking, I'm going to give the second year. And the first one was so hard. And then I just started saying out loud, God, you better be real. You better be real. And I started like crying and saying it like loud, like screaming at the tabernacle, you better be real. I'm not going to suffer this if you're not even real. And then I heard a little rustling and somebody like crawling and walking out. And Jason had been lying prostrate on the tabernacle floor.
She's like, I gotta get out of here.
I was so embarrassed. Imagine. And I was putting on the retreat. I was hosting the retreat. And I'm yelling at the tabernacle, you better be real. And I would, to this day, I would just pray that Jason did not know it was me. Because he was lying. I mean, he probably did. But he was lying.
I'm going to go home and ask him.
Oh, my gosh. And of course, Jason was the only one awake because he had stayed up with everybody who needed to talk to him.
And he just came from Jerusalem. So his time clock was like all
oh,
over.
Oh, really?
Everyone was always wanting to talk to him.
Right.
So, yeah, that weekend was interesting. But wow, I didn't even know that. So I can't wait to go talk to him about that, Erin.
So embarrassing. But
how did you cross over from even like you're talking about that night with that guy and like you knew, like you just knew. And even when you're talking to Jesus in the tabernacle, a part of you knew you were talking to Jesus, right?
Yeah.
But we're in between our head and our heart, right? Mm. And there's just always this wrestling. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you go halfway.
Right.
And you don't like, because I really believe in everybody's life. I mean, he does it several times, but that Jesus will come to you personally in a way, mm-hmm. if it's through people, through talks, through experiences or whatever's happening in your life. and really try to foster a relationship with you.
Yes.
Nobody else.
Right.
You.
Yeah.
And we have to embrace it wholeheartedly or we reject it, but he's always pursuing us.
Yes.
Right? Always. And that, even that night when you were like, oh, I'm doing this. No, I can't do this. No, my dad. You know, it's like that in a way, it was God's way to pursue you that night. Like, don't do this. And right. you heard that small, right. still voice, right?
Right.
So how did you just listen? And how even now to this day, even just maybe struggling 3 weeks away from having a baby and just everything going on in your life. And Aaron, as long as I've known you, which has been a very long, long time, which has been wonderful. And God always has brought you back in my life somehow, always. How have you stayed so faithful, even though not 100% always fully believing? Because you always have been so faithful.
So I don't know about that, but I would say it really does help to have parents who do adoration and they're praying for you all the time. I really do think I was floating on other people's prayers for a lot of it, but I do, I think it really did help me to do a mission year because it brought the faith from my head to my heart. And my mission year was like a crash course in humility. You know, you get humbled a lot. And I think that really helped. And when I went through a super, super hard time and I realized like, something's wrong. Like I have everything that I should need to be doing well. And it's not, I was, in a terrible situation and you came up in my feed and you had just started Women Made New and you were like one of the first Catholics I ever heard talk about counseling and like getting help outside of, just the church, you know? And I remember thinking like, wow, I can't believe she's talking about this publicly. And, you know, if she's like willing to do it, maybe I should just try. And, so I didn't do it right away. It took a little while, but then,
cause you're kind of like, no. Maybe I really don't need to go do that, right?
And at the time, because no one had been talking about it like you were talking about at that time, there's a stigma around it, you know? So, so then I just remember I went to the tabernacle one time again when I was praying, and I was thinking, I don't know how to handle this, God. I just don't know how to handle this. And I felt like God was saying to me, like, remember that other tool that you heard about? Like, what about that? So beautiful, because I went to God, and he sent me somewhere other than just him, you know, to somewhere else and other tools. And
didn't he go with you?
Beautiful. That's true. That's so beautiful. In fact, I was also struggling, attracted to a guy I knew I shouldn't have been in a relationship with. And I was trying to, and I stopped seeing him. And I knew I was like, I should go to counseling to figure this out. So I go to this one place. And I said, I want a Catholic counselor. And they said, well, the only counselor we have is a guy who's Catholic. And I thought, well, you know, I was thinking like this wise monk, you know, I'll go see us. So I go into the room and I walk in and it's this gorgeous, my age, Catholic guy who's wearing a Louis de Montfort chain that I recognize on his wrist. And I like walked in and I just stopped at the door and he's like, hi. And I was like, no. And he goes, what? And I said, no. And I was like, you know, I'm Catholic and I've had like a sponsor and a spiritual director and a mentor. And I've always been totally open with all of them and never even crossed my mind not to be totally honest. And I can tell right now, like, I am not going to be honest with you. And he said to me, actually, that's pretty honest. You're already being honest. And it was so beautiful because God totally used it. He just sent me to somebody who was just a good Catholic guy that I had to go to for 6 months. And it took out all that, any confusion from it, because I knew it was in a clinical setting. But he still brought me in the presence of like the kind of person I should be pursuing.
And God does that. I realize in your life, he did that for me too, where there was someone where it's like, no, this is what you're like along the lines. Because honestly, I grew up in such a secular, just the crazy and always after the wrong guy. Like I didn't know what good actually looked like because right. it was never around me. So sometimes, ladies, if you're listening to this, God will give you an example, and it may not be that person, but he needs to give you an example of what good, godly holiness looks like in a man, because the world isn't just like putting that in front of you, you know, but God will when it's time, when you need that foundation of maybe what you're looking for, or you don't know what you're looking for, he'll kind of give you little glimpses in different people or different men. Like, God will never just leave you. If he's asking you to do something, he will always provide it. He will always give you what you need. He will always give you the grace, the strength, or the wisdom and knowledge in that moment of what it is he's asking you to do. And he was trying to heal Erin in the way she was looking at men, or the wrong men, and how to kind of right order that. So it's beautiful. And he was holding her hand almost through that. And he held my hand through my entire experience, right? And it's just so beautiful that when you really do the will of God and you listen and you're obedient, he's so faithful back, isn't he though?
Yes.
He's so faithful.
And of course, I want to say that my dad was a beautiful example, but with all the addiction, the effects of it, I still had that mix up and confusion. And, but yeah, but God took care, and never leaves you, you know, always meets you where you're at. So
with that being said, women out there that maybe are confused or know they're dating the wrong guy or know they're in a bad relationship, what advice do you have for them? And also, I'm going to take it a step further as well. And I also would like you to speak to women who are having a baby right now, and maybe they're afraid or they're scared. But first, speak to the heart of the women that maybe are in a bad relationship.
Well, chastity can save your life. It really can. I mean, it can
protect you.
Protect you. It really is a form of protection. And it was for me because God is such a loving, incredibly generous father. And even though I had to wait till 38, he was completely worth the wait. And I married, I think, seriously, the most amazing man. And I got so lucky. I can't even imagine being matched with anyone better for me. And God is never outdone in generosity. And we're about to have our third baby. And just how merciful that was. I didn't even know at 38 getting married if I would be able to have kids, because it was getting later in life. And we were able to have, you know, three little miracles. And we have two boys, 3 and 2, and this little girl on the way. So, just super grateful to God for small mercies and giant ones too. Yeah. I mean, the one thing that's getting me through it is the surrender novena. So in terms of, leading up to, and then there was a passage recently that said, like, have no anxiety about anything with, I always butcher these, but with trust, present your request to the Lord, and the Lord who knows what you need will give it to you. And that gave me such comfort. And anytime that I get a little anxious or just as busy and I can't like read the books or, you know, mentally prepare as much as I want to for birth, I just do the surrender novena and I just give it to God. And I just say, you're going to have to take care of it, because I'm limited. So you're going to have to be unlimited in your mercy towards me. And yeah, and he was. I gave birth at 42, or my first birth was at 42. It was only 6 hours. I was able to do it naturally, no complications. And it was incredible. And I would say, if you are getting close to giving birth, don't listen to stories from Crystalina, because he told us that one story about bending over and like tearing apart your spine.
Oh, it was so bad.
It was so, every single time I have like bent over since you said that to pick something up, because it was a juice box. I was like, I called John, one of them dropped his chocolate milk on the floor. And I was like, John, come here. You got to get this.
Not bending over. Not breaking my spine.
Yeah. But that was like terrifying. But yeah.
Awesome. So the surrender novena was your favorite.
Yeah. So the surrender novena is really what helps me the most, actually, right now, preparing for it. It helps me with everything. And St. Therese is my girl too. And she has been a really good friend. And yeah, when I know she's coming with me to this birth and Mary. And so I'm just trying to stay close to them and also get, just getting to adoration, as much as I can, or just in front of the tabernacle even, you know, and that doesn't, for me, it doesn't necessarily have to be adoration, but I just love being close to God. And it was actually in the podcast with you and Dominique that I thought was the best advice ever, which was, I think you were asking her like, what's your advice for women when they come to adoration? And Dominique was saying, like some, not so much what you do in adoration, but just make yourself get there. Just get there and then don't worry about the rest. You know, like God will take care. And I remember Jason saying something like, being a good father is like 99% just being present. It's not even like being like the best or the most, just being present to God and physically has been such a gift and helps so much. And it's hard to do when you're a mom with toddlers, but even if you can only go for a few minutes, I just found it is like, you could try to figure things out or, you know, overly meditate on things. But if you could just go to God physically, he gives you so many answers. And one person said to me, it's like bringing your car into a mechanic and say you drive in and the mechanic, you're sitting in it and the mechanic's doing all this work and you don't know what he's doing. But just by the fact that you're there, you're being fixed and made whole and you don't even know how, but it's happening. So that's all you have to do is just get there and then let God do the rest.
We are going to take a quick break with our friends over at EWTN and we will be right back. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Women Made New. I'm your host, Crystalina Everett. Thank you for joining me. So today, if you were just tuning in, we are interviewing Erin Yupp and her mother, Marie McCroy, just that everyday Catholic woman of how she is overcoming her struggles, where she's been, and how she is handling maybe the temptations or difficulties or how she overcame it in her past. And these women are just so strong and courageous for doing this with me and talking about their stories and also to encourage you. And also before we get back into it, for those who are just tuning in, to know that I was just getting over a sickness and my voice, it sounds like I'm on the verge of just crying every time I open my mouth. So I was just getting over something, but I was literally losing my voice. So we are going to get back into it now with Marie McCroy.
Hi, I'm Marie McCrory, and I'm a mother and a grandmother. I'm a mother of 5 grown-up children and 5 grown-up grandchildren and 2 little ones and 1 on the way. And I grew up in Northern Ireland, Belfast, Northern Ireland, in a cul-de-sac with 20 homes in that cul-de-sac in an estate that was all Catholic. And the cul-de-sac had 20 homes in it, and out of that 20 homes, 120 kids grew up in the street.
Wow, that's amazing.
And it was great because everybody was Catholic and everybody came from the same economic background, and all the Catholics lived in one part of town and all the Protestants lived on the other part of town. And we, until you were growing up, you never really paid much attention to that until you realized as you got older that you couldn't vote even when you became 18 because only one Catholic person was allowed to vote in the family. But the Protestant families could all vote. So we experienced religious discrimination at a very early age, also in work. You knew when you went for a job that they never asked you what your religion was, but they would ask you where you lived. And as soon as you put your address down, they knew you were Catholic. And so you could never become a supervisor or a manager or anything like that. So, yeah, so religious discrimination was that.
Did that make you embarrassed of your faith or did that make you embrace it all the more? Which one was it? Because it had to go either way. Or were you just very discreet about as you grew up? How did you handle that?
Well, as I was growing up, I youth hosteled all over Ireland and rock climbed on the Mourne Mountains free fall, you know, without ropes and stuff with a whole group. And some of the group was Protestant, which was great because when you were living at home, you couldn't mix with anybody because you couldn't go to their home and they couldn't come to ours. So it was, I had a really good girlfriend who was one of the group that we youth hostled with. And it was interesting because we would always go to Mass. We would walk, you know, in our boots and our shorts and stuff to Mass. And one Sunday we went to Mass and the priest told us, how dare you come to church dressed like that, you know, and a whole big lecture in front of everybody in a country church, you know, so everybody knew you. And I remember standing up and saying, Father, you should be so grateful that we came to church because our parents are not even here and we're on holiday and here we are at Mass. And that was the only time I ever remember really speaking out, you know, about the faith in that way, you know, because I was so proud of the fact that we had walked to church and didn't lie in our beds like everybody else. And I remember thinking, I wish I wasn't born Catholic. I wish I could go drinking with all my girlfriends and like, you know, and be a bad girl instead of a good girl, you know, because they didn't have to think about it. And I did.
Because they seem so free, right?
Yes.
They seem so free. And it's just like, why can't I be free like that and be just careless? And, you know, and I actually was. I just like dove right in. I'm like, forget this. And I jumped ship. And I was. But there was absolutely no freedom in it whatsoever. But I understand that envy and I understand that questioning because a lot of people go through it. Some jump off the ship like I do and some just stay on and keep on. But I do understand that.
So I met Michael and we got married and the troubles came to Northern Ireland. We had two children at the time and he had gone back to college in the evenings. He was a great soccer player, very, very athletic. And he came home one night and he said, you know, the British soldiers, we both worked for the government and we came home one night and our son, Thomas, who's the oldest, he was with my mom and dad around the corner and they lived kitty corner to us. So my dad would go out the back door and shout over, I'm sending Thomas home now because they babysat him. And he would walk around. He was only four. And as he was walking around, the British soldiers and the IRA opened up in the street and my husband had to run out and throw himself over our son to protect him from the gunfire. So shortly after that, he got a scholarship to go on a student exchange to America. And he came home and he said to me, how would you feel about minding the two children for the whole summer? You have your mom and dad. We're from families of eight, each of us. And he said, we might just have an opportunity. God is so good. We might just find something in America. And he was so courageous, you know, to come and do that. And so he did. And he took the summer and he came back on a Sunday and he got a call on a Wednesday saying USF would like to offer you a soccer scholarship. He had been playing out in the fields with a group of just a group of ordinary Irish and Scottish guys, just kicking ball, and some scout from USF had seen him and had called and said, we'd like to offer you a scholarship, but it's going to be, you have to be back in the States on Monday. You have to be in school on Monday, so you have to be back here by the weekend. And at that time, flights back then were like $2,000 for each person. And lucky for us at the time, You could be on your husband's passport. So we didn't have to go get passports or anything. But we sat up the whole night and we talked about it. And we decided we didn't want to bring our children up to believe that Protestants were terrible and all the strife about Catholics and Protestants. We didn't want to bring them up prejudiced. So we wanted to come to America. So we made that decision and we told our parents the next day. And so we got on that airplane on Saturday morning. We got up the next day, sold our car, sold everything we had, and got on the plane with $200, two suitcases, and two children. And I didn't know a living soul here. My husband knew about four or five guys. And so that was the first time ever in my life I experienced. Michael had to go to school all day And I had to go to work all day and go to school at night. So I was left with two children in America, not knowing anybody. And we lived near the Golden Gate Park. So I experienced loneliness. Like at home, you walk down the street, everybody would say hello, speak your name, you know. And in America, nobody did that. Nobody said your name. Nobody said hello. You know, they put their heads down and walked by you.
How did you handle it?
So I sat in the Golden Gate Park and I cried all day. And the kids played on the swings. And at the end of that day, I got the kids and I went back to the apartment. And there was eight people living in the apartment. And I said to myself, you can cry, Marie, all day. You don't have the fur to go home. Otherwise, you'd be on a plane. So thank you, God. And you can do something about it. So that night I went up and knocked on every door and said, hi, I'm Marie McCrory. I'm from Belfast. I want to know who you are to say hello at the mailbox.
Wow, you were brave, really brave. And we lived in a different world back then, right?
And that was September. And in April, we gave a St. Patrick's Day party and the whole apartment came. And that was the beginning of our time in America. And we had another three children, and a couple came to our door one night and they knocked on the door. We didn't know them. They knocked on the door and they said, hi, we're Catholic and you have a statue of the Blessed Mother outside. You're at home. And we would like to tell you about the rosary. And so they came in, sat down with us, and she explained about the rosary. Well, we grew up saying the rosary at home, so I have to say this, it was the fastest rosary in the whole world. We called it the alarm call at night. From 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock in Ireland, in the street that we lived in, you would hear, the McCrorys are wanted for the rosary. And six or seven kids would peel off and run in. And, you know, the Kellys are wanted for the rosary. It was the battle cry every night. Huh? But that's how we grew up, you know, saying the rosary. But it was, Holy Mary, Mother God, pray for sinners now. Done. You know, it was the fastest rosary you ever heard. Anyway, this couple said, we have a picture of the Sacred Heart and we would like you to consider consecrating yourselves to the Sacred Heart and to the Blessed Mother and to say a rosary every night. And that's really the beginning of, I would say, what do you call it? I was just a rote Catholic before that. You know, you would go to church because your parents went and you went.
Kind of a head Catholic versus the heart Catholic, yes, right?
Joined the Legion of Mary and all that. And then, you know, but really never had a relationship. Not really, you know. And after that couple came, it just changed our lives because we started with the children and we said the rosary. Now, I started it and Michael kept it going.
Right.
Because he was the head of the family and he loved the rosary. And so we would say the rosary every night. And all Aaron's friends that would come to the house when we lived in Denver, they knew that they couldn't come into our house without saying the rosary. They'd say, oh, we're going to the McCrory. But they were very popular because it was three of them all at the same age, mm-hmm. like Irish triplets. And so they knew they had to say the rosary. And then the Pope came to Denver mm-hmm. for World Youth Day.
I remember that, yes.
And that was such a...
Pope John Paul II.
Yeah, that was such a beautiful experience of being able to attend that and see all people from all over the world just flooding in there and just praying.
Because you think you're alone. You think you're alone in your faith sometimes and you think you're the only ones or there's this little group or this little pocket, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go to something like World Youth Day and then with Pope John Paul II, it was just like, I remember walking through the streets and thinking... This is Catholic. Like, what is happening? You know, you don't experience that.
Yeah.
So it was pretty remarkable.
It was beautiful. It was really beautiful. And the other amazing thing that happened faith-wise was Erin was working in media at the time, and she called me and she said, "Mom, I'm working in Mark Burnett is doing a movie called Son of God, and they need people to call and." You know, get them to buy screens for the movie theaters. And, you know, you're really good on the phone. Would you call? And I said, sure. And so I would be up from like 5 a.m. because you're calling all across America at different times and calling. And for me, it was such a blessing and it was such a joy. I wish I could explain to you because I got to talk to pastors at churches that you couldn't do in Northern Ireland, you know, because we never got that opportunity. And so I'd be calling these pastors and I'd be convincing them to buy a screen, which was $2,500. And I would say to them, would you say a little prayer for me as I'm going to the next call? And they would say, oh, darling, say a prayer for you right now. And then they'd say this beautiful prayer over you. And that happened all day long. And by the time the night was over, you felt, instead of feeling exhausted and tired, you felt so blessed. So blessed with all these people praying. And it came home to me, the power of prayer. Just all these people praying. I felt so different. And just recently, for me, God and Our Lady, it's been a slow travel. It wasn't anything big. We've had, our family has had a lot of little, I would call them, many major miracles our whole lives, because my husband has been so faithful to his faith, wonderful miracle stories. And recently, the church near us, St. Bernadette's, put a beautiful picture of God the Father and the Son. You know, and he was holding, I walked in and saw that, and I can't tell you, something in me changed. Something clicked in me, just changed. I looked at that picture and I just felt his love for his Son, and I've now developed a relationship with the Father. And all of that came slow and steady. And very, very recently, felt little nudges from the Blessed Mother. I had drifted away from emotionally loving her. I was, when I say the rosary, I would just say the rosary. But I loved to feel the rosary. And I was sitting in Mass and I was saying to the Blessed Mother, I want to love you in the rosary more than I'm doing right now. Please give me the grace to feel that you're near me. And I was sitting in Mass and a friend came up and knelt beside me and said, the Blessed Mother wanted you to have these rosary beads. She handed me a beautiful pair of rosary beads.
Sometimes we're spoiled like that, right? Where things will happen in our lives where we're saying something and we're talking to God and he really shows up somehow in some way. And you're just like, that just happened. That just really happened. God really heard me, right? I understand that.
So that was a beautiful moment. That was her.
One thing I want to ask you is, you've lived so much of your life and you're a grandma now and you're kind of in that just later stage in your life. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for women?
I think nowadays, especially now, what we're facing right now with all the turmoil in the world, I think that trust in God is first and foremost, to surrender everything to him every single day when you get up, before you get out of bed, just say, I love you, Jesus, and I'm giving my whole self to you today. And let me do your will. Help me not to offend you. And don't leave me and don't abandon me, because you're my Father and I need you to be near me and take care of me. But also I would say, educate yourself. If you're a young mother and you are just starting out, I would say read what you can about the saints, because the saints' stories are so beautiful. And I think why most people love little Therese is because her life was so simple. It doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be suffering. It can just be joyful. And I think we need joyful Catholics in the world. I really want to see the world. I want to, people, one of the priests recently said, if I came to your home, would I know that you're a Catholic? Would I see a crucifix? Would I see a pair of rosary beads? I want people to look at me and say, man, she has, I want what she has, you know? I want the faith that she has, you know? Just, and I think it's all about not only emotionally thinking about your faith, but educating yourself about your faith. Really know your faith so that you can love God with all your heart and soul and mind.
When you love somebody, you want to know them, right? You want to know as much as you possibly can about that person, and you want to be around them, and you want to be with them, and you want to be knowledgeable about their family and their experiences and on, right? And I think the deeper we get in our faith and we move from the head to the heart, we want to embrace Jesus on a deeper level, right? There's always levels you go with him. If it's levels in your own healing, that will bring you to a next stage in your own relationship with him. But sometimes we get stuck. Sometimes we're just like, because there's something there that we don't want to deal with.
I think the one thing I would say to young mothers is choose your friends wisely. Choose women who will uphold you, you know, and who speak positively. There's a famous saying, and they say, if you can't be saying something positive, don't say anything negative. You know, just walk away. But if you surround yourself with good people who are on the same level as you spiritually, I think it makes a big difference to your support level, you know, and it helps you to grow. And just what you're suggesting, to like get together, have a coffee morning and talk about, Erin used to say to us, she'd call up and say, did you get any little lights from God this week? Did you get any little graces from God this week? And I try to think about at the end of the day, what was a little, did I do any good today or did I do any bad today? You know, how was my life? How am I looking? How's God looking at me?
And what is your favorite prayer?
The Hail Holy Queen.
Thank you so much for being here.
I want to thank my guest again, Erin, and her mother for being here. I just love those two women. Erin and Marie are just such beautiful women, and I just thank God that they are in my life. She's always coming and going, Erin, but she is back in my life now, so it's really nice to be able to see her and her mother and spend that time. And you're going to see a lot of people this week, everyone, that you haven't seen for a really long time. And just enjoy your families, and not to get too distracted, get our phones put down, put away, turned off, and really just spend that time with our family. Or maybe you don't have family, and maybe go spend time with Jesus, because I know he is calling you to spend time with him. I hope you have a wonderful, beautiful Thanksgiving. And for those of you that may not know, or just a quick reminder, that EWTN has come out with a new EWTN online free learning series, Women Made New. And anyone can sign up, anyone can join. And it is an 8-part kind of series with 8 different videos of unbelievable contributors such as Teresa Tomeo, Jeanette Bankovic, Cameron Frad, myself, even Mother Angelica, which I just love her so dearly. And just to help you in your life, maybe this is the time in your life now before the new year that you just can face those things that maybe are hard to face. So if you'd like to join up, you can go to EWTN.com/womenmadenew, or you can download the EWTN Learning app on your phone and take it anywhere and listen to the videos and do the reflections and download the study guide. Hopefully that will help you during this holiday season. And know again, you are all in my prayers. And I'm going to leave you with a quick quote from Mother Angelica. She says, success does not have to be guaranteed before moving forward. I love that, because all of us want to be successful, and all of us want to know that we're gonna just accomplish everything in the beginning if we get started, because if we won't have success, well, then I don't know if I'm going to start, right? But that isn't how God works. God truly does want us all to just have that faith in him. So to just take that step forward, if he's asking you to do something, or if you know you need to call that friend, give it to God, just do it and see what he's trying to show you. God bless you and have a wonderful weekend.